White Aryan resistance calling. White Aryan resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
I've got some tape to play for you from quite a number of years ago back in Indiana, and I hope you can understand it.
50 miles outside of Chicago, and I've done something I haven't done since I was a young boy. I'm at a golf course where I used to buck hay and pick corn. Now it's a golf course. But on this golf course is a graveyard that tomorrow is Memorial Day. Of course, you know that 99% of the people don't give a shit about anybody who died in the war. They don't remember what the war was about, and they lied to them about what the war was about anyhow. So I'm going to walk out here about quarter of a mile or so, see if I can find it. When I was a kid, I used to sit in that Civil War cemetery once in a while with my dog, and read all the names on the tombstones from guys from the Union Army that fought in the great stupid war between the states. The war, they say now, was for the niggas. the niggas, it wasn't for the niggas, but they sure benefited a lot from the war later on. It's a perfect, beautiful park-like scene. Yeah, it's a lot different than the old days when you had to walk through the hay to get back here. I thought this damn thing had a mute on it. Or I mean a pause. But I don't see it. So hell, I'm just gonna let it run. I'm gonna put it up here on my this collar and walk along and make a few comments. I don't see it. So hell, I'm just gonna let it run. I'm going to put it up here on my shirt collar and walk along and make a few comments. You think any of these people out here playing golf give a shit about the soldiers of the Civil War? They don't give a shit about the Korean War. Really World War II, except the Jews have told them that's a good war. That was a good war, because the Jews tell us it was a good war. It helped destroy Western civilization. That's why it was a good war. Gee, I think I see the cemetery in sight. Think any of these golfers are thinking about the Vietnam War? Shit. All they're praying for is a hole in one. or whether they win the Powerball tonight. $215 million in the Powerball. That's what they're interested in. And you know they don't give a shit about Desert Storm. And Iraq. Of course, they'll lie to you. They'll pretend that they care. But to have these kind of things like Memorial Day is actually obscene. Because they don't learn a goddamn thing. They go right back and do the same old thing. White people dying for nothing. Well, not really nothing, because they've, when they're dying, they're promoting the non-white races, whether they know it or not. Making a lot of rich bastards richer. Making a lot of Jews happy. Yep. Well, there's the old cemetery. Wasn't very far back here. So I'm going to do a little bit of my own memorial. The part of the Civil War I liked was the New York draft riots. That made sense. New book out called Lincoln's Concentration Camps. Every time I go through Chicago, I try to stop at the monument for the murdered Confederate soldiers that were marched from the battle lines all the way to Chicago. 5,000 of them died in the concentration camps. They buried them in a mass grave, which is now in South Chicago, not far from the interstate. The mound rises 10 or 12 feet, I guess, at the top. And there was no marker there for decades. Finally, through some insistence of some of the southern boys and some of the northern people, at least they put markers. They've even got a couple of cannons there. 5,000 corpses, 5,000 sets of bones under that mound. Lincoln was a war criminal. And so was Jefferson Davis. They could have avoided that war. Same way with World War II. It could have been avoided. Well, I see that they do maintain this cemetery. They've got a chain around it. It's mowed regularly. And I'm going to, I just wonder how many of these gravestones were stolen. Because there is a flourishing business, you know, in stealing gravestones. There's one here that's pretty, the stone looks a lot newer. Maybe they replaced it. Hezekiah Bowen, Jr., 1826 to 1865. A lot of these are either broken or you can't read them. I can't read that one. There's another one I can't read. I mean, these have been here a long time. These markers are all, most of them, knocked over.
Rogers of Bowen. It's real hard to read the inscription. There's another one that's flat, but the inscription is so faint, it's hard to read. Now, as I remember, there were more than this in here. They've toppled these tombstones. Nobody's done a goddamn thing about it. Really wants to make you go fight for your country, man. Just think, in a few years after you're in the ground, your tombstone won't even be around. There's a couple of them that are broken. I used to be able to read a lot of these, but I don't seem to be able to hardly read them anymore. They're too faint. Too faint. Used to tell the unit the guy was in and everything. Well, for sure the golfers don't give a shit. Let's go over here to, there's a big one over here in one corner. He was probably a general. They should have a list of the people who were buried here. From the Ford family, which Rosella Ford. I worked for when I was a kid. Got all her family in here. And this was a nice stone here. A lot better shape than the Civil War guys got it. Rosella was a spinster. Never married. Owned about 500-600 acres of great property. Got beautiful trees here in this cemetery. Oh, I'll tell you, time has really worn the letters and names and stuff off these. Here is I think it's November 24th. Evidently that was, I don't know, maybe that was when he died, 1849, yeah. Pretty bad situation where people desecrate these places and break the tombstones. Here's one, October 4th, 1861. Priscilla A. Huh. That's a pretty big monument. I wonder whether she was in the military or whether she's a private citizen. Well, looks like there was a combination of Civil War soldiers buried here and civilians, because here's one, Emily Susan Daybrin, I think it is, infant daughter of Samuel and Rebecca Wamsley. I don't remember that, that there were non-military people buried here. Here's another one knocked over. You'd have to take, if you wanted to read these, you'd have to take black crayon and go over them, over the letters, then you could read them all right. But I'm not going to do that. Well, that's about it. There must be about 50 stones either laying flat on the ground or standing, and that means there probably were 150 here that probably were carried off by some hippie back in the 60s or something, who knows. They used to pay a lot of money for tombstones, some of the creeps and perverts. I know a woman who was into that, pretty sick. Well, that's it. Another batch of people who died for nothing, less than nothing. The Civil War was the greatest tragedy that our race ever experienced in this country, in this North America. A tragedy that we have not recovered from. The genetics, the finest men, the finest white men in the South and the North, carrying the finest genes, died. The South never recovered. To this day, didn't recover. Hasn't recovered, even though they think they have. The North, the genes and the gene pool was replaced by Germans and French and a lot of European white people who were fleeing the battles of the 1848 revolution. And obviously the losing side fled Europe and they came here. And that replenished the North. In fact, that's what gave the North their fighting force, because they outnumbered the South 7-1. Imagine that. And the South didn't have an industrial base. That's what the trigger for the war was. The North feared that the South was preparing to build an industrial base, which it was. So that's some of the elements that go into the mix. Now I see a monument up here that's about 100 yards from the main monument. I have no idea what this is or whether this is even a monument. It's probably a damn golfing number system or something. See some robins around here hopping around. That's a good sign of spring. It's May. It's really nice here. Even if it is a golf course for the idle upper middle class, at least it keeps things green and lots of trees. Right. It's not a monument for anybody who's died. It's a monument to tell the damn golfers. 7 par, 4, 427, 378, all that bullshit. Hey, young people, if you're going to fight a war, know what you're going to fight for. And no organized warfare is ever benefiting you. Rich man's war, poor man's fight, no matter what race you are. I got no problem with going to war, but war on an individual basis. I think a war in the streets with somebody who gives you trouble is more important than traveling thousands of miles to kill people you don't even know. If I want to kill people, I want to kill people I know. Somebody's done me wrong. That makes sense to me. I don't know about you. Like my t-shirt says, most people would be dead, but it's against the law to kill them. Why would I want to go to Iraq when my worst enemies are here? My worst enemies in Washington, D.C., Wall Street, and a lot of them even closer than that. They're screwing the white race. And, of course, the people who are screwing the white race the most are the white race. Oh, there's something about coming back to your roots and sort of meditating and even being alone for a while that sort of helps you get a clear picture, even though I've always had a pretty clear picture. You get a little clearer picture of what's of value. And all this present society is bullshit. It's a lie based on hypocrisy, and it's the great sport is guilt. So anyhow, I've done my memorial thing by going to the Confederate cemetery. Not the Confederate. I've been there several times, but this is the Union cemetery. And reminding myself that it was all in vain. Not only was it all in vain, it was destroying the race. And I don't know whether you want to hear this or not, but I'm recording it. And we can go from there. This is Terrible Tommy on the road in Indiana. Almost Memorial Day.
That's it. That's it, boys and girls. That's Terrible Tommy. Terrible Tommy on the road. And that's the way Memorial Day really is. All these phony bastards. If those guys could climb up out of those graves, they'd probably start killing people. This is war.
Well, that was from some tapes I have. I had a big box of tapes. Most of them are not labeled, so I'm taking them out one at a time, playing them for you. Most of them are partial tapes. That graveyard was about, half a mile from my house there in Indiana. It was a nice leisurely walk. And that was on just before Memorial Day of that year. And I didn't have the year on that. So anyhow, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Now the next clip you're going to hear, I'm not quite sure. I'm pretty sure it was on my show. And I think the co-host was John from California, but we're going to play it and see what we get out of this thing.
This out. So they give the guy an FBI background check. And of course, because he's from a village in, where the hell, it's going to say he's nothing, okay? And then they give him a visa. And at the same time, they say, guess what? Now, 500,000 more of you get to come in and go through the same thing. Well, there ain't going to be 500,000 of them that are going to come like that, Tommy, are there? Well, just remember the Simpson-Mazzoli bill, or whatever it was, that was under the Reagan administration, was supposed to fine all the people who hired him. They were supposed to go in and close down plants and everything else. Did you ever see a plant close down?
No, I didn't.
You never saw a big agribusiness close down?
No, I didn't.
Nobody ever got closed down.
Yeah, and they're saying the same thing here. They're saying, well, here's how we're going to control it. We're going to create a new police, a federal police force that will have the ability to check this out.
Just like the ones that let the guys through that flew into the trade center.
Well, this is even more troubling. Not only does it go into your businesses without any warning or anything, but it also has the authority to go into your homes at night and checking for illegals. Now, what do you think the real idea
guess who it's going to be? The white supremacists or the white separatists will be the target. And all the skinheads, you must have illegal aliens in your house.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, what do you expect from that guy down in Arizona? He's been out in the sun too long, and maybe it would have been better if the Vietnamese would have kept him over there when he was there the first time.
I think so, because, you know, there's another problem in this little town about the illegals. I've seen more and more homeless illegals. Now, these are not guys that come up here to work in the, you know, in the plantation. These are guys that are coming up here to live as homeless people. Now, I had that question for you the other day. What do you think they're really doing up here, Tommy?
Crime, thefts, break-ins, home invasions, all kinds of things going on now.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, if I was a homeless guy, meaning living by what I could steal, I wouldn't travel 1,000 miles to come up here unless I was going to steal, right?
Well, they could live better in Mexico because they can get free food down. The government has programs for the indigent.
And they could, in the past, hide easier down there. Up here now, it's impossible.
Well, and if they pull off a big number and they are able to get across the border, the chances of getting them back are very nil. I mean, they've worked for, 6, 7, 8, 10 years to get this one guy back up here that killed a cop.
Yeah, the murderer.
I mean, if they can't get a cop killer back up there, they got a problem.
Oh, but don't we quite even talk about killing a cop in this country?
Well, why don't they just send hitmen down to Mexico and find them and kill them, or hire Mexicans to kill them? I mean, you know, that'd be easy, man. I mean, there's plenty. They need work down there, right? There's got to be murder incorporated in Mexico.
There is, but the people running that program would be the government guys that provided security for the White House.
Yeah, man. Well, I think they probably got better security in Mexico and Mexico City than they do up here.
Oh, no shit. When you're down there, you don't try any bullshit like this.
Well, it's like I remember once in Germany when I was in the Army and I was in a nice nightclub. This was not a cheap jukebox joint. And a guy got out of hand, and two guys came in with knee-length leather coats on, hats on, and walked right up. He was right next to me, or almost next to me. They pulled out machine guns.
Oh.
In a fancy nightclub. Ross, they took that guy out of there like you wouldn't believe.
That's what the same thing happened last week in Tijuana. They've got a special country club down there that's like for the elites and whatnot. 10 armed men came with masks over their heads, you know, black masks, all of that type of thing. With SWAT team-like precision, came right into the country club in the middle of the dinner and got this guy, pulled him right out, started shooting and everybody down on the floor. They photographed the whole thing down in Mexico, and they said these guys acted with such precision that they have to be ex-army guys, ex-federal police, ex-guys that do this type of thing for the government that are now working for the narcos.
This is why I say those are the people we have to hire across the border to straighten out the border.
Oh,
we don't have to have to do anything on this side of the border. We don't have to go against anybody's rights at all. Just hire professional Mexicans on that side of the border.
And think of how much money we'd be saving. I mean, Jesus Christ, these guys, each of those guys probably for $100 did that abduction.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, the other idea I had was we got to shoot them in the ass with these microchips. Every time one comes across the border and we catch them, just
shooting their ass with a microchip and putting salt on it while you're
shooting it. Yeah.
And then any time they come across the border or do anything, the equipment detects it. And they got the whole information on the guy right in his ass.
Oh,
now, well, that's not inhumane. You're not denying them. I mean, you're not torturing them. It's just like your dog. You take it down and get a microchip in. Now, how simple can you get?
Folks, listen to this. We have the technology. We can rebuild him.
That's right. Yes, we can. We are Aryans, and we will make it right, but we must have order.
Talking about order, Tommy, what do you think is going to happen in the disorder frame when the feds are going to start giving these billions free to the illegal aliens for emergency surgeries and things?
Yeah, the emergency rooms now that are going broke all over California, and they're dragging down the whole hospital with them, really. And now this moron, this creep president we've got, which is absolutely the worst president that I've seen in my lifetime. I thought Clinton was bad, but he was great compared to this guy. Now he's going to underwrite and give a couple of billion dollars, and which they've already told him is just a drop in a bucket.
Yeah.
So you realize how much they're spending tens of billions on emergency care for people with runny noses and scuffed knees. I mean, the wetbacks go into these places with little teeny problems.
Yeah.
These are not people who are mangled or anything like that.
And they don't have to declare their citizenship. It's like the Catholic churches used to be in the old days. It's a free haven for them to come in here and do all of this.
Well, the Catholic churches and now many of the others now are regular outposts for these people. They give them all kinds of, they take them in, they give them money, they tell them where to go. It's a whole network, it's a business. And, of course, the fat cat Republicans and the Democrats, they're all in on it. And, of course, that's what I've always said, even way back when I was running for Congress. So, anyhow, now if that doesn't just drive people out of the Republican Party, I don't know what will.
Well, what's going to happen, Tommy, to the country I would hope that somehow this would cause some type of a disturbance. I mean, what more do we have to see?
Look, Igor, let me tell you something. It's good in a way, because the longer it goes, the worse the explosion's going to be. Now, it might be too late, but I'm telling you, the longer it goes, the worse the explosion is going to be. Now, I predicted a long time ago the shooting would start on the border. It doesn't take a lot of it, just a few corpses laying around, and that border's going to go crazy. And, of course, as fast as they can get to a telephone, East L.A. is going to blow up.
Oh, no shit.
And just like the boy that wrote Civil War II, Tom Chittum, he said that's what's going to happen, and I believe it will. I don't believe whites and other people, or even Americanized Mexicans, are going to go forever. I know that they, seem like they're going to do anything, but I don't think they'll go forever, because within the next 36 months, it's predicted that the screws are really going to start turning, and that's going to have to do with more higher gas prices. And once those screws get to really turning, and then we're looking at the 12-year, they're talking about a 12-year total crash on the oil, but in 3 years, when gas goes $5, $6, $7 a gallon, these people are going to be living in these SUVs. They're not going to be driving them.
Boy, what a great idea for a real estate empire that would be.
Well, yeah, you could get a truck and sublet it out. You know, you could have two apartments in the back of a delivery truck. I mean,
Everybody makes
money sometimes. I mean, everybody makes money sometimes. So I was thinking of getting a place out here about an acre and buying old wreck or vans with no motors in them.
Yeah.
And then renting out the back of them to live in. And I think we could fill the place up, $1 a day, say.
Absolutely.
We could make a fortune.
Absolutely.
And then if we could get that Japanese stuff over here to where, you put quarters or 50 cents in a slot, and you just slide in there and you can sleep, and you got a little television and everything. That's where we're headed. But I don't think the capitalist people at the top have enough compassion to allow something like that.
No.
They just want people living in the alleys, living on the street, and then they'll have to just round them up, charge them with all kinds of crimes, and throw them into prison or throw them into some kind of a concentration camp.
Oh, Tommy, I out in Duluth, I saw there's a couple of these farm type of businesses out there, big agribusinesses employing thousands of these Mexican guys that are illegals. They've got like third, fourth-rate company towns out there that are hidden away in the bushes. I mean, where thousands of people live, families, people, and these they're living in a level just above animals.
And they never get raided.
Never.
You see, everybody criticizes the South of the plantation system, but the plantation system was run quite well compared to this, because they had cradle to grave, they had food to eat, they had a place to stay, they had a place to be buried, they had a church to go to, they had everything, and under certain conditions, they could go off the plantation. This is a real perverted plantation system, to where the taxpayers in general are paying for all these social services, and these guys at the top, the corporates making all the money, they don't have to come up with anything.
No, and the standard of living for the people that they're employing, these poor, look, these illegals, they're, and I say this with some type of kindness. Like, I don't blame my dog for being a dog and doing what he does, and, you know, sleeping in my doorway and stuff like that. You can't blame somebody on an animal level for trying to eat.
No, but just like a book I read one time, forget the fellow's name. He said, you know, the cow breaks down your fence and gets into your garden. Now you don't hate that cow.
No.
But you got to get the cow out of your garden.
Yeah, and you got to build a fence.
So you got to hammer him on the ass and get him out of your garden first, and then build a good fence.
Exactly, and I think the point that you were making is that in the old South, the standard of living of the people from cradle to grave was 2,000% higher than the way I've seen these poor people living. It's
well,
like in slavery.
They had so much agriculture in the South, they always ate well and like that. Of course, they do here, too. There's no problem getting food around this part of the country because
no.
There's so much agriculture. But anyhow, wait a minute. Well, I want to cover some other stuff here. You know, I get tired of talking about latrinos all the time. Guess what? Oh, the wife of Oral Roberts dies after a fall.
Oh.
That big preacher, Oral Roberts?
Yeah.
I called him Moral Oral.
Yeah.
One of the thousands of these people that are ripping off the public, the sheeple.
Yep.
And I wonder if Oral pushed her down the stairs.
Well, take a look at the look on her face in that picture.
Yeah, well, that's probably why
she's not hitting on all eight cylinders, folks.
I think that might have something to do with it. I call him he's a famed evangelist for 66 years. What a useless life that is.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's probably got three or four girlfriends at least, you know, so that's too bad for her, but, you know, even preachers got to get some new poop-dang once in a while. Hey, guess what? Boeing's going to build a facility in India.
Uh-oh, here go the jobs.
There's no room for building a plant here.
Oh, they could make plenty of room if they just got these illegals out of here.
Yeah, it's un-Boeing. You know, now they left Seattle, and now they're going to India. Well, didn't they first go to Illinois or someplace, Pennsylvania? They moved out of Seattle. Now that was just an interim thing, so they're going to be building most of their stuff in India. And, you know, India is one of the most populous nations in the world. I think it's even more populous than China.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And, of course, India is where they, you know, they leave the cows walk around because they don't want to kill a cow and all
that
kind
right.
of stuff. Luckily, our Aryan forefathers were there a while and got out. The ones that didn't get out got absorbed into this funny-looking breed of people who have sort of an Anglo skull structure.
Like the Ethiopians.
But they're black.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, well, most of the Ethiopians I run into look more like Negroes, but these people have a tremendous amount of these Indians have a a skull like an Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, or whatever, but they're black.
Yeah,
they're
very dark brown.
They're weird-looking people.
Yeah.
I saw one the other day. But anyhow, they're over there. Now, they're over here, too. Now, I would say this. If we're going to have a Boeing plant built in India, then we should ship all the Indians that are in the United States back there to help them run that plant.
That would be a perfect solution.
Be a perfect trade.
They pay them $1 a day.
Yeah. Right, and we'd get them out of our hair.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's some of the news. And you remember old Preston Tucker?
Oh, the guy that invented the car.
Yeah. Well, he did a lot of great things with the car, and he got screwed by the government and everybody else and all the big automakers that were getting their contracts from the government, their war contracts and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, once in a while somebody talks about him, and I think we need to give him a lot of credit, but it's too late now. He's dead. He's been dead for a long time now. That was a good... Did you ever see one of those cars? The Tucker?
No, not the Tucker, but I saw the movie.
Well, it was a good movie.
Bridges in it.
Yeah, that was a good movie, but a lot of people don't know you could change that engine in about a half an hour.
Wow.
Then Volkswagen borrowed the same idea. There's only about 3 bolts on a Volkswagen engine and a couple of wires.
Oh, and folks, Tommy knows what he's talking about changing engines. You know what his wild addiction is? Working on cars. He loves it.
I hate it. It's just that when you're poor, you gotta do that. You gotta do that. What do you got over there? Oh, hey, ex-FBI agent named in Florida murder charge. You know, I used to watch the television, and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., they never had any of those kind of FBI guys on TV.
You had a television in your home, Tom? You had 6 kids. I thought you had 6 kids because you didn't have a television.
Well, hell, I had Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. was way back when I don't even think I had any kids. But I'll tell you what, they were all so clean-cut, Aryan-looking boys, and they never did anything wrong, sort of like Jack Webb and his boys.
They had a saying, you don't lie in the FBI.
Well, now they have gone totally to seed, man, because I hear contract killings and everything else carried out by federal men. Wow. Anyhow, look, get your subscriptions in to the big, 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 big war newspaper that's going to be 28 pages this next quarterly. And I know you like the April issue, and if you haven't got a copy of the April issue and you want to see what it's all about, send us a little donation, about $3.
I all the time, and as far as merchandising, you've got some great stuff.
We got, nothing is sacred anymore. My operating room down here in the bunker, where, you know, we've had this bunker down deep in the Southern California ground for years, because otherwise we couldn't operate for the Mexicans that are trotting across the roof all the time. Of course, you know, we've been experimenting down here, Dr. Metzger, for years. We've had Jerry the Jew in there. We haven't made much progress. Why don't you go over there, Igor, assume your job, and stick him a little bit. He hasn't said anything, man.
I'm changing it, Master. Okay.
Get him. Get that. Yeah, that's a pretty good. Jerry the Jew, man, I'll tell you. We've done a lot of experiments on that guy, but he's still in the cage, and he ain't getting out either. We're going to have to get a new subject in that cage, because we've performed every Nazi operation we could think of on him. And
we could always find him a girl and then watch them mate like apes.
Oh, okay. All right, now back to the news. We got Emmett Till. Remember him? If you're an old fart, you'll remember him. During the invasion of the South, during the 50s and 60s, Emmett Till was a little smart-ass nigger who went down there to Mississippi from Chicago. And, of course, according to newspapers, he was an honor student, a wonderful kid, never did anything wrong. You notice how they do that with the spades?
Honor student, Tommy? No, it meant on her.
Oh, I see. But you notice how that they're into this Negro worship. I can call it nothing else but Negro worship. When a nigger does something, he's always an honor student, a wonderful athlete, family man, never did anything wrong, and just can't understand how you can pick on him like that, you know. But if a white kid does something, hey, Katie barred the door shut, there's a man under the bed. They kick the shit out of him in the newspapers.
Yeah, and they even make fun of his buck teeth if he's got them.
Yeah, so Emmett Till goes down there from Chicago to Mississippi, and he acts like a Chicago nigger. And guess what? They whacked him.
Yeah,
they,
you know,
they, all he did was whistle at a white woman. Do you believe that's all it was? I don't believe that. I believe there was more involved in that story.
Well, you know something? If I was walking down the street of Compton, and Suge Knight and Master P and a bunch of those guys who are killers, I mean, they just absolutely hate white people, were out there, and I said something that pissed them off.
Yeah,
they roast my ass in a second, and it would not be a newspaper.
And if you stood on the corner down in Compton and whistled at the black women going by, how long do you think that would work? So now they keep bringing these stories up. It don't make any difference how old. It's just like the Jews and the Germans. I mean, for 100 years, they'll still be digging these stories up, running them over and over, and that is to do what? Make you feel guilty for being white. What do you think that's all about? Of course, guilt is the way they keep you enslaved, white man. You better figure that out pretty soon. And unless you can get this guilt off your back, this false, phony guilt off your back, then you're never going to get free.
How true, Tommy, how true. I mean, like, people out there in Radio Land, just ask yourselves this. Is there a single Negro that feels guilty about a goddamn thing that would happen to you? Answer.
Have you ever heard the spokesman for the Negro community getting up on television and saying, I must apologize to the white community for this dastardly deed that Leroy did?
Well, that's
how about a Jew apologizing to you? Has that ever happened once in your life?
Well, that's about it, boys and girls. We're running out of tape for our telephone version. And our version is up at resist.com. You may download it on MP3. Or you can call that other telephone number I gave you, and I don't have it here now, and you can hear a mini report almost every day. So that's it. So long. Sayonara, boys and girls.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time, but I'm going to run a tape, or partial tape. Maybe I'll run the rest tomorrow. It's an old tape from 1974 or 5 that Reverend Rick Norton, who was a sidekick of James K. Warner in L.A., and I did an interview on the kosher racket. And hopefully this tape is not too bad.
I'm going to be talking about the U and the K labeling. To start the discussion, let me read you what I received from the Food and Drug Administration when I asked of them what the U that you see on so many labels with a circle around it and the K stands for. This is what I received from the Food and Drug Administration. The symbol which consists of the letter U placed inside the letter O is a symbol authorized by the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations, more commonly known as the Orthodox Union, to be placed on the label of foods which comply with the Jewish dietary laws. Then they say detailed information regarding the significance of the use of this symbol may be obtained by writing to the organization's headquarters. The symbol K is used by certain food manufacturers to indicate that the food is kosher. That is, it complies with the Jewish dietary laws and its processing has been under the direction of a rabbi. Neither of these symbols are required by or are under the authority of any acts enforced by the Food and Drug Administration. I want to begin our program this morning talking with Rabbi Maurice Lamb. Good morning, Dr. Lamb.
Good morning, Teresa.
Dr. Lamb, I would like to, because I gave just that brief explanation that the Food and Drug Administration sent out, and I would like to ask you for a more detailed explanation as to what the U and the K labels mean on the various foods that we see it on.
Teresa, first I'm Rabbi Lamb. And secondly, I have with me, at the telephone, a Rabbi Yehuda Bookstein, who is our technical advisor and the representative of the OU on the West Coast. So if you wouldn't mind, if every now and then we need some help, we'll call upon him.
All right, fine.
Good. The OU, Teresa, is a national organization, communally sponsored, non-profit, which sees to it that the foods that Jews wish to eat are kosher. By kosher, we mean that the foods that should not have any meat in it at all, and they make absolutely sure that there is no animal fat, no meat of any kind, whatever. There are times when you have to know that the food is not a dairy product, and so that there's no dairy in it, such as coffee, which or on the East Coast, the mocha, the coffee, the coffee with vegetables is not dairy. Now, the OU provides that kind of supervision that should not have any meat in it at all, and they make absolutely sure that there is no animal fat, no meat of any kind, whatever. There are times when you have to know that the food is not a dairy product, and so that there's no dairy in it, such as coffee, which or on the East Coast, the mocha, the coffee, the coffee with vegetables is not dairy. Now, the OU provides that kind of supervision. It is a lay organization, really. It is associated with the Rabbinic Council of America. The Rabbinic Council of America makes the rabbinic decisions. The OU, which stands for the Orthodox Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America, is the congregational or the lay body, and they oversee people who are supervisors of the dietary laws in the plants throughout the country.
All right, Rabbi, if I had a food company and wanted permission to put the OU labeling on my food, how would I go about getting it and what would it cost me?
You would make an application to the office in New York. You tell them that you want your food now to be kosher so that Jewish people could buy it. They would then send down one of their executives who would come down and look at your plant and find out whether anything needs to be done to your plant altogether to make it kosher. In other words, you may be using fruit or vegetable products with no fats, whatever, and your company needs to do nothing at all to receive that OU. And if you need something to be done, such as the fact that the plant may need to be using different ingredients, and before it does, it would have to be completely sterilized before over again, and you have to use the new ingredients or the ingredients which are kosher in your product, and then that would be a kosher product. What you would be charged for is only the labor costs of the people who have to be employed, in other words, the rabbinic supervisor, the one who supervises their dietary laws.
So it would be under continuous supervision then?
No.
No.
Certain companies need that supervision once or twice a year. Other companies need it monthly, others weekly, and still others might need it round the clock.
Right now,
depending on how complicated the food situation is at the time.
Now, how does the OU labeling differ from the K symbol?
There are three symbols we're talking about, so that we could make the distinction even finer. One is an OU, one is an OK, that in other words, a K within a circle,
mm-hmm.
and the other is a K. The OU is a national organization which is communally sponsored, which is nonprofit. The OK is a privately sponsored, national, reliable organization. And it is not a non-profit organization, although the idea that there is much money made on this, or there is some kind of major profit, is a total falsehood. It borders on, I don't know, it's someplace between the profit and non-profit kind of situation. I'm not exactly sure. The K, on the other hand, is the symbol that a company puts on it that a rabbi, whoever he may be, in whatever locale he may be, has certified to them that the food was kosher. Now, that K is less reliable than the OK and the OU, of course, because we don't know who the rabbi is or what his knowledge of food chemistry is, how often he comes into the plant, so on and so forth.
Okay, so there might be a situation there where the company would just purchase the right from a certain rabbi to put the K on, whereas that would not happen with the OU and OK labeling.
That is true, except that we, of course, assume that the rabbis all have integrity and that they're honest, so that they would take care of what mm-hmm. they're doing. But that's the difference.
But that would be, you know, the possibility there.
Right.
Okay. I'll ask you to stay on the line with us. We're going to do a few commercial breaks, and then we'll come back and hear what the two reverends that are in the studio have to say about the labeling and how they feel about it.
Fine.
So, everybody, hang in there, and we'll... Rabbi Lamb's brief explanation of the U and the K labeling. Reverend Metzger, what are your concerns about this particular type of labeling on our food?
Well, we believe it's economic mainly, and we believe that 99% of the American public are not aware of a price that is added into the product, of which we cannot find how much is being paid. We write the companies, and we write the manufacturers, of course, and the government, and we cannot find how much money is involved in this. No one will tell us. Now, 99% of the people do not understand that when they pick up, for instance, a box of Supreme steel wool balls that has a little U down here, they don't know what that means. Now, when Jewish periodicals advertise, manufacturers advertise in Jewish periodicals, it's very clearly stated, this is certified to be kosher, and so forth, in big letters. But when the average Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, or other Jew, which many Jews do not follow these dietary laws, goes to the market, he doesn't know what's going on, and we think he should know what's going on.
Rabbi Lamb, let me ask you a question. Why would it be necessary to have the U labeling on things like soap pads, aluminum foil, that type of thing?
Okay. Teresa, I'm going to ask Rabbi Buchband to answer this. He's right here.
Great. The reason, good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi.
The reason why the OU is necessary on soap pads, because many soaps are made with an animal soap stock, which would be contrary to Jewish religion. And the kosher soap pads, or the kosher detergents, are made with synthetic detergents, which are not made from animal byproducts.
I see. So
this is used on pots or pans. That can be a religious problem or a question of contamination.
Mm-hmm. Then would the same thing be true with something like aluminum foil?
Yes, the problem with aluminum foil is that the metal, the aluminum as it's extruded, is being cut, and the rollers and the cutting equipment is used, they have to oil it in order to get a very fine, thin cut. And some of the chemicals utilized in such a process do have or can have oleic acids, which can be an animal or a vegetable byproduct.
And under Jewish dietary law, then, one cannot use anything that is an animal byproduct of any kind or is made from it.
If it is a non-kosher animal byproduct, because we do have kosher meat,
mm-hmm.
but the average fat or meat being manufactured in the United States or throughout the world is non-kosher.
For those of us who don't know, Rabbi, what is the difference between kosher meat and other meat?
The difference is as follows. In the Old Testament, there are restrictions as to what basic category of meat is kosher. For example, only beef or lamb or veal is a kosher species. Not pork. Now, even beef or lamb, the Old Testament says, must be processed in a way, or as far as treated, must be sorted in a certain manner. The Old Testament prohibits the eating of blood, so all the blood must be drained out of the meat by a process of certain salting. Certain fatty tissues have to be cut away, which the Old Testament prohibits.
Okay.
It's the Old Testament, the Bible prohibits. And after going through all of these processes, then the meat comes into final.
I'm going to hold it right there, and we'll try to play the rest of it back tomorrow. I'm going to play back the recording and see if the quality is going to be enough that you can understand it. It's a very good tape on the Kosher Racket, and I don't know how many of you people are familiar with it. Probably most of you should be, of what a racket the Jews play on everybody else with this kosher food thing. They even have kosher food wars up in New York City, where one rabbi will sue another rabbi for the rights to rip off the manufacturer for whatever he's wanting to do. And it gets into big money. It's a real racket. So I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday, and you take it easy in between time, and think white, act white, be white.
Today, we're all going to learn a new term. It's only two words. Now listen closely. Can all of you say constructive fraud?
Constructive fraud!
Did you ever get the feeling as you're staring at the ceiling that this game of life is playing fair? Seems as fast as we can make it, there's a hand that grabs and takes it till they plant us in a grave somewhere. Like a rodent on a treadmill, we keep pushing for it uphill, but we never seem to get too far. Well, if you think you're being taken, then you're ready to awaken to the truth of what we really are. We're all indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, who have lost our soul posterity through ignorance and apathy, and now we're being taxed out of our graves. And as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb, contented with some socialistic crumb. Well, the naked truth and fact is we're all saps who pay our taxes, and that is why the banksters keep us dumb. Could the state of our condition be the product of omission, what we didn't learn in public schools? And did our fathers all through history all fight and die for liberty so we could play the tyrant's fools? And can you call it education when it's all indoctrination to obey the hidden powers that be? Did we fight the revolution? Did we win the world wars just to slumber into slavery? We're all indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, who have lost our soul posterity through ignorance and apathy, and now we're being taxed out of our graves. And as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb, contented with some humanistic crumb. Well, the naked truth and fact is we're all saps who pay those taxes, and that is why the banksters keep us dumb. While Franklin and Eleanor were telling us they hated war, they made a deal behind our backs. They said the bankers could enslave us for a portion of our wages, and today we call it income tax. But what they failed then to tell us was the way they planned to sell us into statutory slavery. Now it's called constructive fraud. Some even claim the wrath of God. I call it social insecurity. Let's stop being indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, and reclaim our lost posterity. Rise up and proclaim liberty. It's high time we rock the boat and make some waves. 'Cause as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb. They'll starve us on their communistic crumb. And the naked truth and fact is we don't have to pay those taxes. Yes, it's time we show those banksters, those international gangsters. So let's turn the tables and spoil all their fun.